CPS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Get fired up.
Oh, yeah.
Performance-enhancing audio.
This is the State of Combat Podcast with Brian Campbell.
Oh, yeah, the best theme song in the history of podcasts. It is the State of Combat Podcast. Your boy, BC. Round two this week of the MMA. I know what you're saying. You're a box guy. Where's the box fight? Hey, why don't you give me some good box fights to talk about? We'll be back next week. Reed Bartholomew and I. But I'm sitting here, okay, looking in the eyes of a Hall of Famer, the one and only, always sweet, never sour, an earthquake survivor, the Tower of Power. He is Sugar Rashad Evans. Rashad, twice in 1 week, my man, as we set the table for Saturday's fights. What's happening?
Not much, man. Not much at all. Just getting ready for this weekend, man. So I'm excited to fight. You know, I can see a wrestler in Blaze get down, and you know I'm all about that wrestling.
You are all about that wrestling.
The wrestling.
You mentioned his name. We got a great show for you today. Not only are we going to set the stage, preview all things UFC Fight Night Vegas this weekend, Blades against Volkov in that main event. A lot of sneaky good fights on that card that we're about to get to. We got Curtis Blaydes himself today on this show. And spoiler alert, he ain't pulling no punches, Rashad, on all things fighter pay, Francis Ngannou, whatever you want to bring. You set him up, razor blades will knock him down. So get excited about that. He's basically like, fight me, folks.
I didn't come here to do no challenges. I came here to fight. Put me in a ring. Fight me.
Rashad, this life is crazy, but you know what I'm doing to better myself?
What's that, BC?
Urgings of my wife and kids who pretty much hate me during this quarantine, running 3 miles every morning. And life is just so much easier to handle when you cleanse the palate to start the day, right? You get a little bit of your own sweat on you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I got my day started almost every morning with a nice workout, man. I go out to the gym and train with the guys, man. And it makes a world of difference when it comes to mental clarity, you know, being able to get that mental exhaustion, that physical exhaustion brings you to just a total place of calmness. At least for me, it does.
I need some peace and harmony. Gonna leave the beers in the fridge. Gonna start running in the morning. Okay.
There you go, BC. There you go. I mean, you know, challenge yourself. What about that? What about that sparring match challenge we were talking about?
Myself and Brandon Wise. Well, that man is a tall drink of angry water there. I don't know if I should accept, but you know, I didn't jack. There's still time in the best shape of my life. I don't know if I should go the full Rashad here though and give up meat altogether. Rashad, I know the physical benefits of switching from meat to a plant-based diet, but mentally, can you sell me on that?
I mean, if you're a diehard meat eater, it will be a tough transition, but once you start feeling the results and feeling your body and feeling aches and pains go away, then it kind of gives you a little bit of positive reinforcement to make you kind of want to stay away from the meat. That's the only thing I can give to you. But I mean, this is meat season. If there's any meat season, it's right now in the summertime where it's barbecue season. So it's hard to say no to the burgers and the hot dogs and the steaks on a grill right now. I can understand that, but it may help you out, BC.
You're right. It's barbecue season. It's really hard to go no meat when you want that injection.
You slipper the hot beef injection.
Indeed. Thank you very much. All righty then. Rashad, we got a great show. Couple of news and notes, couple of headlines to look at. But right after, we take a quick pause for the cause on the other side. It's your boys, BC and Rashad. Curtis Blaydes to follow. UFC Fight Night this weekend.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else?
So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catches. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
And we're back, BC, Rashad Evans. Sir, let me give you a little bit of extra news that we have encountered over the last few days in the sport of MMA. Sources, Rashad, are working, say that the UFC is working on a comeback fight. This is Ariel Helwani of ESPN reporting for Yoel Romero this August at middleweight against one Uriah Hall. Ooh. Baby girl, put it on me, Rashad. You like that or what?
I love this, and here's why I love it. You know, Yoel is always a dog in there, and he's always going to push it. You know what I'm saying? But he's got a good partner in Uriah Hall who's starting to believe in himself. Now that he's over at Fortis MMA, I'm just seeing a different Uriah Hall, even the one better than the one that hopped on the scene, because the one that hopped on the scene was dynamic, and he was less fearless, but at the same time, you didn't see the confidence that this new Uriah Hall has, and I think it has a lot to do with that team that he's with now. So I think that this is the fight to get Uriah Hall in the conversation and get him finally in the trajectory that was thought he would be since he got into the UFC.
Romero, 43, coming off the worst performance from a marketing standpoint. Look, I thought he beat Israel Adesanya. I'm no judge. I thought he beat him. I had him up 3-2. It's a math equation, Rashad. It's not an emotional conversation, all right? But, you know, Dana, I'm sure they ain't happy with him. He's had every chance in the world at that damn middleweight title. What are we doing now? I mean, look, this is a good matchup. I like it. But or do we write him off? Could this guy F around and get back in the title contention?
Yeah, I think he can, and here's why. Because when you look at Yoel, like we've seen in the fight with Israel, there was another level that he could have hit. It looked like he just doesn't go to that level. So when it comes down to it, it all goes down to how much does he want to fight and that percentage he wants to give in a continual basis throughout a whole entire fight. It seems to be that he goes like 100% at times, and then a rest, he's at like 70 or 50%. You know what I'm saying? And then he sprints for it. But if he goes at his capability, then of course he can be there. But now at some point, BC, you got to be saying 43 years old, how long can you do it? Even if you're Superman, at some point, Father Time knocks on your door.
I mean, you're 40, you've got abs, and even you are envious of that man. I just don't want you to be frustrated again if he goes out there against Uriah and starts, you know, laying an egg and doing the counterboxing stuff. I don't want to hear this again.
It's frustrating. It's hurtful. And, you know, it's something that's totally unexpected, but it's part of the sport.
It is. Helwani also reporting the shot. We got a fight night card August 8th. No sight, because I believe Dana believes that there's a chance we could put some asses in seats. But Rashad, I don't know if you've been following the COVID trend lately. It's just about telling us no right now. We ain't going to do that. And Dana did say he doesn't want to do halfway. No 25% audience, all or nothing here. But either way, it could be Vegas, it could be Abu Dhabi, we don't know. But check out this doubleheader: Derek Lewis, Alexei Oleinik in your main event, Chris Weidman, Omari Akhmedov in your co-main. You taking that? You like it?
I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. The big boys, and here's the thing about it, is that we need some some big beef injection. You know what I'm saying? We need to have some of these big guys going in there showing what we got. You know, the heavyweight division has been getting kind of stale with the two guys at the top kind of tied up and built, dealing with their whole feud. So, you know, there's a bit of stagnation, you know, with Francis Ngannou making room at the top, but there's no one for him to fight. So we need some contenders, and this is perfect. You know, you got two big heavyweight matchups, and at that point, we should be able to get a clear-cut contender of somebody to feed Francis or somebody that can actually get to that point.
Yeah, I agree on that. And Chris Weidman was supposed to face Jack Hermanson. That fight fell apart due to COVID. Now he's got Akhmedov. Rashad, do you believe that there's still – well, first of all, shout out to the beef you were asking for.
Another beef injection.
Do you think there's still light at the end of the tunnel on the Chris Weidman experience? Because I've written him off many a time before. Can he beat Omari Akhmedov?
I think he can. You know, the thing with Chris is that he's had a really bad run, and he's gone against some guys that, you know, are at the top of the food chain. And at the same time, when you're at the top of the food chain, that becomes your regular competition. So you're expected to always compete at that level. But with Chris Weidman having the injuries that he had, you know, it really took a toll on him mentally. And when you have these injuries and you don't physically feel like you used to, it's hard to go in there and perform like you used to, or feel like you can perform like you used to. So you see the inconsistencies in his performance and just more or less the confidence. I'm looking at the fact that this is not like a name brand fighter, and no disrespect to my man, he's just not of the elk that, you know, Chris is used to fighting. That could give Chris some confidence to feel like he can go in there and be the old Chris Weidman.
Yeah, he needs it.
What's up? Stop hiding from the real men.
Okay, Chris Weidman, thank you. We're not hiding. You know, I get what he's saying. He's basically like, I don't suck. My chin's not dead. I just, you know, I just had 7 bouts of bad luck. I don't know. At some point, it's a pattern, Rashad. I'm at the point now. Give me the Rock Holding match. Give me the Andy Silva trilogy. Look, there's worse fights you can make with the spider than that one, all right? But he believes he's still in it. We'll see. Hey, Maheta, you know my boy Maheta, right?
Maheta, Maheta's a beast.
That freak. So Maheta is coming back from injury. Of course, he pushed John Jones to the limit in that split decision. He's in the news, though, by saying, hey, this Yana Kunitskaya stuff that you see on Instagram, it's real, brother, and we're moving to South Florida together. We're relocating. We're consummating. We're going to make this thing happen. Shout out to Maheta on that one. All right. You know, he bangs, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I seen them together. I knew they were the thing. I didn't know how serious it was getting, but I mean, you always can tell by the look of the eye, and I did catch a few glances. So I can see where it's at right now.
Maheta, I see that giant. Yeah, you know, if we're going to compare giant hammer tats on your chest, Maheta's is so much better than Brock Lesnar's. Right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, it's great.
I've got one, and I got it from your mom.
Hey, thanks, Brock. Thank you. All right, Rashad, we are going to bring him in right now. It is your heavyweight contender headlining this Saturday's card in Las Vegas, a fight night at the Apex. It's Curtis Razorblades. Buckle up. Coming at you. Curtis, how you doing, man?
I'm fine, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Are you fired the hell up for this heavyweight fight Saturday night as I am, or what? Talk to me, Blades. Talk to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very, very excited. I'm just not a overly emotional guy until the work is done. I put all my energy into mental preparation and just waiting to release it after the win.
I hear you. You certainly released that in your last fight against Junior Dos Santos in January. I feel like when you lost to Francis the second time, some people are like, oh, maybe Curtis isn't the guy we thought he was. Well, you came back with 3 wins, and you sent JDS to hell. What did that say to those people?
I mean, if you don't believe in me, I've always said this. I could care less. I don't need fans to believe me. My coaches believe in me. My family believes in me. I believe in me. And that's legitimately all that matters. Like, fans are fans. They don't really majority of them, they don't even understand MMA. A lot of them are anti-grappling, even though grappling is like the prime like martial art of MMA. So listening to fans and allowing them to sway how you feel about yourself does you no good.
I hear you. I hear you, man. When you consider the fact that outside of your Ngannou fights, you're unbeaten in your entire career, unbeaten in the UFC, where do you fit right now in the heavyweight title picture?
I mean, after this weekend, after I get my hand raised, I'm expecting DC and Stipe to have the trilogy in August, and then I've heard the reports they're both expected to retire, so that would mean the belt will be vacant, and I expect it to be Ngannou versus me sometime in December.
Now, where are you at when you think about Ngannou's name? He has been the big hurdle in your career, hopes and dreams. Do you like the man? Do you hear the name and get fired up? Do you get pissed off? Who is Ngannou to you right now?
Just another opponent. I don't put a lot of emotion into these things. So when you do that, you don't fight smart. You don't think about things intelligently. I try to be a pretty intelligent fighter. I don't hate him. He did his job. His job is to beat me. He did his job better than I could do my job in these 2 nights. I don't hate him. I respect him. He's very good. He's had a great career. He was able to get a title shot. He's unsuccessful, but he got all the way up there. So to lose to him, it doesn't hurt my ego. Doesn't hurt anything. Like nobody ends this game undefeated. If you're in there for long enough, especially heavyweight, you want to lose. You're going to get caught. He's got 2 losses in the UFC. He lost to Stipe. He lost to Derek Lewis. It happens.
You know, despite the way that second fight went down, you had a ton of success in that first fight. So how confident are you if you get past Volkov, if you get Francis for the real belt, that you've figured out what you need to do to beat him?
We were extremely confident going into the last one. I know what to do. We all know what to do. What does Stipe do? That's one. I just have to get him on the ground. I know it's easier said than done, but I've already proven that I can get him on the ground. I did it twice in our original fight, which was my debut fight. So I don't view Ngannou the way I guess the rest of the world does, like a big scary Godzilla. He's just a man to me.
Yeah. I can understand that. You have the championship mindset and confidence, and I appreciate that. Your evolution into a complete striker has been really fun to watch. What's been the key for you?
Just tons of hard work with my striking coach, Benny Lopez. He just the way he breaks down the fundamentals is in a way that it just translates very well to me. I never had a striking coach before I moved to Denver, before I joined Team Elevation, and I'm blessed that I was able to connect with him, and he was able to pour his time and energy into me. And I'm very proud of the strides I've made, the growth I've made. I'm especially proud that I was able to put my striking skills on display this last fight. I know he was very proud of me. He's always wanted me to get a knockout like that. So I was a lot happier for him than I was myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the heavyweight division can be one where, you know, it can take a while to really become the best you can be. You can linger. You can be late 30s, early 40s, as we see a lot of the top guys. You're only 29. How much room is there still for you to grow? You know, like how close have we come to seeing the best razor blades at this point?
We're not even halfway there. This is nowhere near my final evolution. I'm going to continue to grow. I still haven't really added like a lot of the kicks into my game. Right now, I mostly rely on my boxing, footwork, and my wrestling. There's still a lot of jiu-jitsu principles that I'm still adding. Jiu-jitsu is going to be like once I finally get comfortable enough to attack submissions on the regular, that'll be my final evolution. That's going to take years. But I'm, as you said, I'm not in a rush. I'm only 29. Even in Ghana, he's 5 years older than me. Everyone's older than me. I'm going to be here for a long time. I've got 8-9 more years.
I checked out the fight poster for Saturday night, and you got a sweet haircut in there with some designs in the side. Is that still hot and fresh right now, despite the quarantine? We going to see an all styled up Curtis Blaydes on Saturday?
Oh yes, my barber he's still working. I don't know if he's supposed to be working. He was able to hook me up before I came out of Vegas. So I'll definitely have to. Designs in my hair.
Excellent. Getting ready for that. Let's talk about this matchup with Volkov. And, you know, outside of that one punch he got hit with against Derek Lewis that ended that fight, man, he has been incredible since joining the UFC. How do you use your skills specifically match up with what he brings to the table?
He's a long striker. He likes to use kicks and teeps. He likes to have distance. I do the opposite. I like to be in close. I like to close the distance. I like to grapple. I don't think he wants to be on his back. I don't think he wants to be getting hit on his face or on his back. I don't think he wants to burn the energy that it takes to get back up, only to get taken right back down over and over and over. So I think I'm going to win because of my conditioning and my tenacity and my power. I think I'm stronger than he is as well.
Have you always had this same belief in your power as a UFC fighter, that, you know, the kind you showed, like I mentioned, against Dos Santos, that woke up a lot of people if they hadn't watched all your fights? But did you always have that same belief in that you can end a fight at any time?
Yeah, I mean, I've always had that, but, like, I've always also said this, why play the 50-50 game on the feet if we're both equal on the hands? But I'm just a much, much better grappler. Why not just grapple? I don't like getting hit in the face. So if I can put you in your butt, you can hit me, I'll do that. I know the fans like the knockouts, but I would have preferred to ragdoll Junior. I would have preferred to do to him what I did to Abdulrahimov in Abu Dhabi. That's what I like. I mean, it's cool I got the knockouts, a nice highlight, but I like wrestling.
I like that. Let's talk about this quarantine in terms of how it affected the training camp. I've talked to so many fighters, man, and it's like some people are like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Other people are like, I won't lie to you, it's been weird. It's been different. How has your build to this fight been?
I think guys who use this, the quarantine, as an excuse for why they're training, I know it does well. That just means they're not. And I was committed, because for me, it didn't affect anyone at the elevation. It didn't affect Neil Magny. It didn't affect Drew Dober. It didn't affect Justin Gaethje. Like, we're professionals. This is our life. We're going to work out. We can work out in the middle of a park. It doesn't matter. Like, we're going to hit pads. We're going to pick up heavy weights. We're going to run sprints. So you can do that wherever. So it didn't affect my camp at all. Mm-hmm.
We're seeing almost a split in some way between big name fighters. Some guys are retiring. Some guys are sitting out and making a lot of quotes in the headlines about not being paid enough. But on the flip side, we're seeing opportunists, guys staying active, guys going for their dreams. Where do you sort of sit on the whole idea of fighter pay? And do you respect some of the stances that some of these big name guys have taken?
I respect all the stances. I'm very proud of the sacrifices they're making, because I know they're putting their careers and their paychecks in jeopardy. I respect what they're doing, because we need it. We need big names to speak up, because we do deserve more money. Like, I'm not even trying to be greedy, but we're on ESPN now, even before ESPN, but especially since we partnered with ESPN. Like, that's supposed to mean something. We should be getting. So we should be able to live lives of other professional athletes, hockey, baseball, NFL, MLB, NBA. Like, we should be able to, I'm not saying we need to make $20 million a fight, but top top guys like John Jones, Jorge McGregor, like those type guys, they should be getting their minimum $5 million, and that should cause a trickle down effect. Like, you don't, I don't like seeing guys fighting, going through wars against another good guy. Both guys are amazing, but they're both fighting for 12 and 12. Like, that's a little embarrassing. Like, to find out that these high caliber athletes, a lot of them have to have jobs still. Like, how do you, if you want the sport to grow, you need to provide more amenities, provide more ways for us to focus on training. You should have guys who are ranked who have to drive for Uber. That's embarrassing.
That's fair. Do you think this is the right time to be heard, even though it's, you know, kind of going through a recession and no one knows where the money's coming from if we can't pack the crowds?
I don't want to hear those excuses. I don't want to hear those excuses. The money's there. We get 14% of the revenue. Even if you just bumped us up to like 29% of revenue, that would be a giant raise for guys. Like I said, I don't want to hear that. If you don't want to pay us, just say you don't want to give us the money that's there. Just say that. Don't make excuses that I don't know where it's going to come from. Like, bro, don't do that. Don't disrespect our intelligence like that. Like, we're worth more. And if you just don't want to pay us, just say that. And then we can make our own informed decisions. Like, you trying to pee on us and call it rain, like we're dumb. We're not. I know we get hit in the head a lot, but we're not dumb.
then how do you think this gets fixed?
I don't know. Because it shouldn't be this hard. Like, they shouldn't be. It shouldn't be like pulling teeth. It should just want to treat us better. Like, you want your athletes to be at their best, right? You want healthcare. Like, you want guys to be able to get injuries taken care of so they can be the best fighter they can be to come fight. Like, but half the guys get injured during camp, don't have the money, going to camps with partially torn meniscuses and partially torn rotator cuffs, and then blame it on the fight so that way the UFC can pay for it. But why not just UFC provide healthcare so guys can get those injuries fixed and they can be better fighters when they're out of the fight?
Yeah, certainly a lot of discussions to be had in the future. But final question here, how does this fight going to look on Saturday night? If you're a fan, if you're on the edge of whether you should tune in, what are we going to see when you touch gloves with Volkov?
I mean, all I can guarantee is I'm going to pressure, I'm going to push the pace. I can't guarantee I'm going to get takedowns, because I would have guaranteed the last time I'm going to get takedowns. I'm going 0-6, so I don't know. It's a fight. It's chaotic, but I will pressure him. I will be constantly looking for a double, and if the takedown isn't there, I want to throw my hands. And if he's blocking my strikes, I'm going to look to duck. I'm going to look to wrestle. It's just going to be a lot of constant pressure. It won't be a lot of breaks, a lot of lulls in the action.
All right, Curtis Blades, great talking to you, man. Best of luck for you on Saturday night. Fired up for this. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Wow, Rashad, you did not, up to this point, have access to that interview. I can tell you what the man said, but he was firing on all cylinders, especially when talking about the fighter pay issue. He respects the John Joneses, the Jorge Masvidals, who he thinks are willing to risk it all right now for change. But I want to read you this specific quote, Rashad, when I said, look, you know, this is all good, Curtis, but there's not a lot of money out there right now. We're in a recession. We're in a quarantine. What do you say to that? He said, quote, I don't want to hear all those excuses. The money is there. I don't want to hear those excuses. Even if you bumped us up from 14% of the revenue share to 29, that would be a giant raise. I don't want to hear that. If you don't want to pay us, just say that you don't want to give us the money. Just say it. Don't make excuses like I don't know where the money's coming from. It's like, bro, don't do that. Don't disrespect our intelligence. We are worth more. It's like you trying to pee on us and calling it rain like we're dumb. I know we get hit in the head a lot, but we are not dumb, end quote. I think he may have some splaining to do up at UFC Central in Vegas this week, and Uncle Dana might call him over to the corner, but it might be justified. What do you think about this take?
I mean, I think he has a great point and a great take. You know, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, you know, there is the financial pressure of what they're facing now and due with the new expenses that they're expending dealing with this whole COVID situation. But at the same time, you know, there is money. It's just that everybody that's normally gets their share may have to get a little bit less. And that's what it comes down to is just complete pay structure. But, you know, outside of all of that, what I hear more than anything is that, you know, behind the Jorge Masvidals and the John Jones and you know, the Henry Cejudos and all those who champion the cause of not getting paid, now it's becoming something that more fighters are feeling confident echoing the sentiments because those at the top have started to buck the scale, you know. And I think, you know, at this point, there may be more. It may become an avalanche, and to the point where, you know, it does, you know, come to a situation where fighters are holding out, you know. And I think that the more fighters are speaking out and speaking from this point of view, which Curtis Blaydes is, and he has some good, really, really good points there. You know, I think once fighters start speaking out against that, then the UFC is going to have to address it some kind of way.
He had some interesting points. He thinks that, look, he just wants UFC fighters, because of the ESPN deal, something he referenced, that he thinks it's embarrassing that they have to have part-time jobs, some of them. He thinks it's embarrassing that, you know, they're not the main eventers aren't making a minimum amount of millions. You know, he's like, you know, a John Jones, a McGregor, those type of guys. One thing that was really interesting, though, that he brought up, Rashad, was injuries. According to Curtis Blaydes, he says more often than not, guys are getting hurt in camp, and because they can't afford to get healed up, they are going into fights knowingly injured, and then they're telling the UFC that the fight caused the injury so that they can get the recovery paid for. And he's basically like, look, we need better health care. We need better training and recovery. If you want us to be at our best when we enter the cage, you need to take care of us. Is there any truth to that? I can't speak to that. I don't know the situation. But are guys, you know, going in with injuries when they don't need to just to try to get the health care they deserve?
Yeah, some guys do go on banged up, but we do have health care you can get if you're not going for a fight. All you really have to do is just go there and just say that, you know, you injured yourself in training or whatnot, and they will, the UFC. So that's another thing too. If you don't understand, and that's the biggest disconnect too. So there's a disconnect with the fighters and just the information and the stuff that they do have, because they do have the ability to get the help they need outside of, you know, having to do it for a fight. They do have that ability, but at the same time, a lot of fighters don't really understand the whole health coverage that they do have. So a lot of fighters do believe, because that's how it used to be. It used to be you had to do a fight in order to get whatever hurt taken care of. But now you can get it taken care of beforehand. But a lot of fighters don't understand. All you have to do is just reach out to the medical staff, and they will approve it.
And I think things like the Performance Institute has been a big step forward in fighter treatment. You know, go there, eat for free. So that, and, you know, we're not going to sit here and vilify all things UFC brass. They're doing some things good.
They are doing some things good, and I understand where the fighters coming from. And I think that the fighters they need to come together. And I think this is long overdue. It's long overdue, but at the same time, it's a tough situation that the UFC is going to have to face and deal with, because now that they're going into uncertainty times on an economic level, the fighters are not trying to hear it, because, you know, they know their worth now. And the whole ESPN deal, as you said, you know, it just makes them feel like, you know, it's almost they need to get paid more.
You know, I wish, because Dana can deny all he wants the financial realities of Endeavor, the parent company. But Rashad, I think it's pretty obvious when you look at court filings and all that. Like, the company took on a lot of debt when it was purchased by Endeavor, IME, WME, IMG, whatever you want to call it. That $4.2 billion, like, them payments are due, right? This is the problem right now.
Right.
The brand is thriving. they got this giant deal, but most of it, it seems, is going to pay off the fact that Endeavor took on such a, I mean, they paid $4.2 billion. That's a ridiculous amount for a league.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the amount of debt that they're facing, because what they did is they spent a lot of money, and now they're in the phase of where they're trying to get it back, and that's why they built the Apex and all those different arenas, so that way they can have fights all the time, you know, and fit their time zone gaps that they normally have. Now they can have fights that go 24/7, live fights that go 24/7, because now they have their own arena, and that was a plan, and that was a vision that they had. So they spent a lot of money thinking they're going to get it back, and now they're in the phase where they're trying to get some of their money back. But now we're facing an economic crisis, and now the fighters want their just due. And it's really a perfect storm, you know. But here's another reason why I feel it is that, you know, us fighters have been kept at our pay scale for so long, is that when you look at other sports, like professional sports, like football and baseball or basketball for that matter, once those athletes make those kind of money, you can't control them anymore. You know what I'm saying? And that's one thing that it's hard to tell somebody what to do when they got the money to make the choices that they want to make. You know what I'm saying? And I think, you know, it's a leverage thing too. You know what I'm saying? So it's a lot that goes into this whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I hate using the inmates running the asylum comparison, because it makes fighters seem like meat and property, but that's how they look like in business, and UFC certainly doesn't want to have 50 Conor McGregors. It's already hard enough to deal with one.
I just want to say from the bottom of me, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Yeah,
and that's the reality of the situation, because and that's one thing that makes the UFC fighters and made the sport so adoring, is the fact that us fighters are so approachable. You know what I'm saying? You meet one of us and it's like meeting somebody that you've known for a long time. We're not pretentious for the most part, and we don't come at you with this big time attitude. And a lot of it is the fact that, you know what I'm saying, we don't have that economic separation. You know what I'm saying? We can't pay for that separation. So we don't get used to not dealing with people, you know what I'm saying? So that it's been one of the things that made the sport grow, the fact that we've been so approachable. But fighters got to get paid, though.
It's not exclusive to UFC, these issues, by the way. I was recently reading that giant ESPN oral history book on, you know, where they interviewed everybody, and very similar about the handling of the SportsCenter anchors. Remember in the 90s, Rashad? You had Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann. They were like superstars doing that, you know, evening SportsCenter. And they got paid so much money. They're doing commercials. And for ESPN management, these guys became hard to control. These guys started calling their own shots. These guys were demanding things. So they basically went to a new model where they never wanted anyone to get too famous, and everyone's expendable, and they're constantly reloading new guys, you know, everything to keep from having these guys that become, you know, too famous, too powerful, too rich. And I think you see that in a lot of business where, the guys in the office keep cashing those checks. That's life, okay? That's how it is. Let's roll on here with what Curtis Blaydes said, and it plays into this Saturday's fight against Alexander Volkov. Two top 10 heavyweights and a lot at stake, Rashad, about the potential future in terms of title. But how about what Curtis Blaydes says? According to the Razor, he's hearing some things that when Dice Stipe fight for the third time on August 15th, that not one, but both fighters could walk away for good afterwards, leaving the title vacant. According to Curtis Blaydes, if he beats Alexander Volkov, he feels he will be in position to fight Francis Ngannou for the third time for that vacant title. Rashad, a lot of things have to fall for that entire scenario to play out. But I like this man's vision. I like his confidence. And he's here to tell you, Francis Ngannou is just a man. I ain't afraid of him. I respect him, but I'm coming for him. Give me some of that, Curtis Blaydes.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And here's the thing, like, about it, you know, Can Curtis Blaydes take on a guy like Ngannou? Yeah, of course. And he's been in there with him twice, so the whole fear thing is gone. If anything, now he has more of a chip on his shoulder about the fight, you know? And as far as his vision, his idea of what he said coming true, I can totally see that. You know, you take DC, who's already said that he's already at the end of his road, and then you look at Stipe, whether he said it or not, his action is showing that he's already looking at the other side of the rainbow. You know, he's got his family, he's got his financial security with his job, being, you know, being a fireman, but also, you know, being a champion all these years over. So he's set, you know, he's ready to sail off into the sunset, because he's already exceeded expectations beyond belief, and everything else is just extra icing on the cake. So yeah, and you know what? And also, you don't even understand, you know, we don't even really know how bad his eye was injured and what he's really having to put some patchwork on to get through a camp with DC, you know? I mean, some guys come like, you know, my eye may have one more camp in it, and that's if I don't get hit in the eye again, you know? So that could be the case.
We're not all Michael Bisping. We're not all, take it out, okay? Like, the injury that could cause you to go, yeah, I had a great run, you know? Might as well cash that check one more time and walk away.
I'm absolutely.
Indeed. So let's say, what about this idea? At 29, Curtis Blaydes, you know, he might be evolving into one of, if not the most complete heavyweight in UFC. And Rashad, his evolution, he says, is continuing. Now, look, we know him wrestling base. He said it on this podcast. He'd prefer to go out there every fight and just drag people down and be all over them. But he's learned to strike at an elite level. 3-fight win streak. That one punch KO of Junior Dos Santos last year was a major eye opener to anyone who didn't realize that he can do that. Anyone who hadn't seen the Overeem fight. Anyone who didn't realize that he's capable of ending a fight with one shot. But now he's telling us that at 29, he's looking to add that jiu-jitsu element. He's looking to go out there and get submissions now to really be that complete force. I don't think it's crazy, Rashad, because I think a lot of people undervalue Blaydes because the two Ngannou losses are fresh in their mind. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that as this division reloads with age, that we're going to see a lot of Curtis Blaydes for the next 5-6 years. And tell me he's not a complete fighter right now. Like, this guy's got the goods, Rashad. Go back and watch the fights. He's a sleeper.
No, he definitely is a sleeper. And you know, he's got the goods, as you would say, in spades. You know, when it comes down to it, his wrestling ability, it reminds me of a Khabib, you know, someone who has the ability to take someone down and do the wash and repeat process, as I say, you know, take him down, let him up, take him down, let him up. And the only thing that was really missing in his game was before was the in-between, the striking that helped him get to his shots very smoothly. But now he's got that down so well, you know. Now he knows how to train, exchange punches, and then transition at the part where the guy is going for that big punch thinking he's going to be there, and that's when he slips underneath. And that's a technique that's hard to learn, because at the same time you have to be very confident in your timing to know that you're going to slip that punch as that guy is trying to think that he has you lined up for that big shot. And that takes confidence, but it takes a pressure moving forward and a confidence moving forward. And you've seen that with his last fight with JDS. So I think that, you know, with this fight right here, going against a guy who's taller, but at the same time doesn't have the reach, he's going to have a lot of legs to grab and upend him. So it should be a Curtis Blaydes mauling.
I mean, you look at Blaydes' record, 13-2. Okay, the first Ngannou loss. He was winning that fight. He was taking Frank down left and right, retired at the end of the second round due to injuries and damage. You could say that, you know, we learned a lot from that fight. Look, the second fight, the 45-second loss to Ngannou, it is what he is. It is. He got smoked. But Rashad, Blaydes has victories over Junior Dos Santos, Alistair Overeem, Mark Hunt, Alexei Oleinik. That's like... very few guys have a resume that good in the heavyweight division. If he adds Alexander Volkov to it, yes. Whether he gets the next title shot or not, he's in this. How do you think they match up? Because when I asked Curtis Blaydes this, he said, look, this guy's a good striker and all. What happens when I take him down? What happens? Rashad, what happens if he takes this giant Russian down?
Well, I mean, what's going to happen is that he's going to be stuck on his back. And you know, Volkov, he does have some good jiu-jitsu off his back as far as being able to move, and he doesn't get planted on there. But with Curtis Blaydes' pressure, he has a very driving pressure going forward, and he grinds his guys into the mat, and he has very heavy pressure with those elbows. The only thing that may be Volkov's saving grace is the fact that he's got such a long torso, so it'll be more of an effort for Blaydes to be able to hit that elbows inside the pocket, and that which may be able to provide Volkov some space to get back up to his feet. But if Curtis goes and operates from the half guard position, then he has a better chance of landing some substantial ground and pound. And I think, you know, that's the position that he's going to try to go for. But Volkov is very tricky, because trying to close that range on a Volkov is hard, because all he really needs is to hit one shot. And then he has such good punch progression that you're getting hit with four or five shots before you even can react to the one. You know, and that's the danger with going somebody like Volkov, who has accurate strike, has enough power to stun you, and then has the busyness of a lighter fighter to keep peppering you with shots all night long.
Yeah, he's got the 6'7" frame. He's got a good kick game. He's only 31. In six UFC fights, Rashad, Volkov has pretty much been spotless. We know he got knocked out by Derek Lewis at UFC 229, but he basically won 2 9/10 of those three rounds in that fight. Also stopped Fabricio Werdum, stopped Stefan Struve, took a decision from Roy Nelson and Greg Hardy. He's had a good run here, but when they match up, look, I think Curtis Blaydes is that stock that's rising. If he can finish him, I mean, look, if he can finish Junior Dos Santos, he can finish Alexander Volkov. This would be another statement. This will be a how do you like me now? I think he does it. I think he does it. You give him five rounds, I think he gets there, Rashad.
I don't even give him five rounds. I think he gets this done inside of maybe four rounds. I think so, because I think that his pressure on top and his ability to grind, you know, he likes to grind, and a lot of guys don't dig that grinding. You know, he's the kind of guy that'll put his head in your chest and get you against the cage and just kind of pop shot you all night and drag you down to the ground over and over again until he's like, you know what, just take it, okay? Just take it. I'm done. That's what he does to you, you know?
Yep. Let me bang indeed. Rashad, the best fight of this night, I'm going to tell you right now, it's the co-main event. It's a featherweight bout. Josh Emmett is back, and he's got a deal with Shane Burgos. These are two kind of sneaky names at 145 that we don't mention enough. Emmett's really only gone down in the last five fights when Jeremy Stephens broke his face. Outside of that, he's sending folks to hell. And I think Shane Burgos has really rebounded from that one loss and really put together a good run as a strong, active, honest fighter here. I don't really know which direction this one goes, but I'm buckling up. I'm in this. Let's do this.
I know. I like this one as well, too. Emmett returning. You know, the only thing that stands for me is, you know, Emmett had those two big knockouts and one against my boy Michael Johnson that really let people know that he's somebody to be, you know, that he's there. He's arrived, you know. But, you know, he took some time off and now he's getting back into it. And that being an older fighter, that's the only thing, you know, when you start and stopping and stuff like that, it's harder to get back into the octagon and things like that. So it's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, going against a surgeon, you know, Shane Burgos, who's, you know, feeling more confident and just, you know, wants to show people that even though he did stumble a few fights ago, four fights ago, now he's back and better than ever. And now he believes that he can be at the top of the weight class.
Yeah, he's got a sneaky record, 13-1, Shane Burgos, just that knockout loss to Calvin Kattar. How he's come back, we've seen him get decisions, submissions, knockouts. He's been in some close fights, of course, but he's often in the fight of the night because he brings it with that pressure style. If they're going to run into each other like two trains, I'm going to back Emmett's power in this one, but this is going to be a good fight. You know, this could have main evented a lower level fight night card, and I would have not been unhappy. Also, we're going to see in the women's bantamweight division, Raquel Pennington looking to bounce back from that second loss to Holly Holm when she faces 42-year-old Marion Renault. But Rashad, at 31, this should tell us which direction Rocky Pennington is going. And what I mean by that is, look, she only loses to the elite. We know who she is, but I just didn't see a good game plan in that whole rematch. I didn't see next level fight IQ. I didn't, you know, like, I've seen her.
Yeah.
I didn't wins in the past. I've seen her finish and retire Amisha Tate, but I don't know. There was just something missing in that fight that kind of gave me a fear for her future. I don't know, you know, can she evolve? Does she want this? In her last four fights, although she's fought elite people, she's taken three losses and won a split decision over Irene Aldara, which could have gone either way. So this is going to be an interesting spot for her.
It really is, you know, and, you know, fighting from that stale position is a very tough place to fight from, you know, because you want to be there and you're part of you want to be there, I should say. And you don't know which part that is the part that's, you know, doing it because it's repetitive, or it's the part that, you know, wants to die for, you know, and sometimes when you're in that place of uncertainty, you don't know which one is which. But when it comes to fight night, it always comes out and you see. So I would like to see Rocky get back on her thing and start to believe in her game, because she, you know, she's still a young fighter and she's been in there with some good competition, and the lessons that she learned from the fight can project her to be a top contender in a division that's really not too terribly deep. And you're always a couple wins away from being the next one in conversation. You know what I'm saying? So she has the ability to still be there. Hopefully being on the same card as Tisha Torres, you know, gave her a little bit of motivation and helped her train a little bit harder, and gave her a little bit more of what she was missing in the last few fights that she's been out there.
Yeah, I wonder if Rocky was ever the same, not just from the injury layoff from the time she injured her arm in that accident, or the leg in that accident, excuse me, but then the vicious loss to Amanda Nunes. You wonder what that does physically, mentally to you. But you mentioned an interesting part. They're in a relationship, of course, Tisha and Rocky. We know that. They're fighting on the same card. Rashad, they both badly need wins. Like, this could end horribly for that marriage, meaning, you know, they could both take losses that lead to exits from the company. I'm not trying to
be
bad on anybody, but Tisha Torres, who has long been an elite title contender at women's strawweight, only 30 years old, but we've talked a lot in the past really about her inability, I guess, to evolve, but has a style where she doesn't have the power. She doesn't have that next level submission ability. She's in it against anybody. She's got a motor, but she doesn't have that next level thing. She's got four straight defeats. Yes, super elite competition, by the way. But most people don't hang around if they lose five. I don't know much about her opponent here, Brianna Van Buren. Very unheralded, fresh off her UFC debut with a win. But if anyone on this card needs a win for survival, it's the Tiny Tornado, who has beaten some big names, but in their very early stages of their run in Invicta.
Yeah, man, she desperately needs it. And you're talking about someone who, you know, her and Raquel have actually been fighting on the same vibe, you know, just missing that extra oomph out there that they used to have. And, you know, with Tisha, you know, I see phases of the old Tisha come, but it comes in spurts, you know, and then for the most part, it just seems to be that she's just uncertain in ways that she used to never be. And it's tough when you compete like this, because when you compete on a bubble and when you're on a losing streak, it's one of the hardest things mentally to bounce back from, because it's not so much about your opponent that you're facing that night. It's about all the other opponents and all the other results that you had that night as well, too, and all the questions that you may have around the elephant in the room, the fact that you've been on a losing streak, and you just hate for those questions to come. But at the same time, that's all people can think of when they look at you getting ready to fight again. So it's you end up fighting yourself, and it comes to the point where if she's, you know, it's a mental thing. And if they mentally prepare themselves to act as if this is only one fight and all the other ones didn't matter, then they can come out of this. But if not, then it could be an exit.
Yeah, it could be. I hate to see that. I really love, by the way, I think even though Ronda Rousey, the launch of that bantamweight division really, you know, put women's fighting within the UFC at least on the map, although they had done a lot in Strikeforce to establish that. Rousey was an attraction. That division was fun, but I really think it was the women's strawweights that opened up the idea of women's fighting being more than attraction for UFC fans, that it's like we can get badass matchups every time. And Tisha's part of that original tough class, late 2014, right? Rose Namajunas. I mean, there's so many big names that came out of there. So it's sort of like you always know how old you are when people that you remember when they came in start, you know, retiring or getting knocked out. Always like, it's always a tough transition in that regard. So hopefully she can pull something off there. We'll see what Brianna Van Buren can offer. Do you like this Bilal Muhammad Lyman Good welterweight bout on the main card? At the very least, they're going to bang, Rashad.
Bilal is one of those guys who's always goes out there and he gives it, you know, he comes forward and he's not afraid to wear his nose on the other side of his face in pursuit of that. You know what I'm saying? That's one thing I love about Bilal. Whether he's getting beat or whether he's doing a beating, he's coming forward and Lyman Good, man. He's a tough talent as well too. And someone who has a lot of promise. So this is going to be a great, great matchup, man. Good fight.
A lot of people excited about this catchweight bout at 160 pounds to open the card. Jim Miller will move into a first-place tie with Cowboy Cerrone for UFC appearances, Rashad, when he enters the octagon for the 35th friggin' time. This time against Roosevelt Roberts. Jim Miller, 36 years old. Rashad, it's been like 4 or 5 years now where we're like, okay, another loss. Maybe that's it for Jim Miller. But, you know, he'll stop somebody when you least expect it. He's actually won 3 out of his last 5 entering this fight. You got anything to say about Jim Miller? I mean, he's as blue collar, as tough as balls as they come.
You know, Jim Miller, ever since he's found a way to deal with his Lyme disease situation and starting to feel better, it's almost as if he's got a spark back into his career, you know, which is good for him because I know that he was suffering competing with that for a long time, and to finally be able to feel good, you know, to have your body back and be able to do what you love to do, it's got to feel amazing for him. So, you know, hats off to him. And it's surprising to have, you know, that kind of longevity, but the guy like Jim Miller like that, you know, he's one of those guys you're talking about, that a staple in the UFC since the beginning.
Indeed. You like Roosevelt Roberts? I think that this is a fight that he can make a statement with, even though Jim's tough as balls. He's a $2 steak tough. I think Rosie's going to eat that up.
Yeah, I think this is all about, you know, Roosevelt's. This is for Roosevelt to show what he can do, you know. Lightning fast, you know, got an edge. In attitude, and you know, he fights. He's a fan favorite guy. You know, he knocks people out, and he's somebody who can compete against the top guys. But he's got to be able to beat a guy like Jim Miller and beat him in a way that gets the attention that he needs to have his name thrust in a conversation of the top guys in his division. But being on the card the way he is starting it off, that's a huge nod to say that he's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, no doubt about it. A lot of sneaky good fights on this undercard, Rashad. We're not going to break them all down, but the prelim main event, lightweights, Clay Guida, Bobby Green.
Yeah. Ooh, give me some of that. Listen, the Carpenter, man, the Carpenter can't go wrong with the Carpenter, man. He just keeps on coming forward. And, I mean, you talk about a guy with 9 lives. I mean, he's been in it for a minute, and he just keeps on reinventing himself. And, you know, I think it has to do with the fact that he's not afraid to move camps. You know, when he wasn't getting what he needed at Jackson camp, he went over to Alpha Male, and now he's there, and he's found his home there, training with guys that keeps him young, you know, training against some young razors that keep him nice and sharp. And keep some imagining and knowing that the new trends are coming. So he's been finding some success, but you know, Bobby Green, this is my dude right here. He competes with so much attitude, you know, he competes with so much attitude, but the thing that makes Bobby not live up to the potential that he can is the fact that he's such an emotional fighter. You got to be able to divorce yourself from some of that emotion in the fight, so you can make smarter decisions inside the octagon. And you see so many times Bobby gets pulled into such a trash talking game, or, you know, getting anything just not about what's going on in the fight. He gets pulled, his distraction gets pulled away too easy. And going against a guy like Clay Guida, you're going to have to stay focused the whole entire time.
You can't be looking to whoop that ass. You got to look to win that fight.
I whoop that ass. What can I say?
Thank you, Rampage. Thank you for sliding in with that. Rashad, the further fight on this undercard I want to focus on, again, women's flyweights. We talked about it on Tuesday's show. We need people to talk about in this division besides the great Valentina. Roxanne Modafferi, the veteran, the happy warrior, around forever. She's fresh off that, not just upset of Macy Barber, but really, you know, slow demolition in terms of Barber's injuries and gas tank in that fight. That's a big comeback win. She's facing an equally upstart Lauren Murphy here at 125. Look, this fight's the second fight on the card. It's not getting a ton of attention, but we're fresh off talking about this division for the first time in a while. Is Roxy still a player here? If she backs up another win here, I mean, is it too late to cut the 37-year-old out of the story here?
Not at all. And especially the fact that, you know, Roxanne she's a late bloomer. You know what I'm saying? And being a late bloomer, things come a little bit longer. Things take a little bit slower. But the things that she needed along the way built her to be what she is right now. You know, all the steps that she took along the way helped to develop her game. And now she's developing a quite complete game. And her stand-up, the glaring, you know, the hole in her game has gotten a little bit better. And not that she's a dynamic striker now, but now she strikes good enough to land some shots that are meaningful, but at the same time, close the distance and get the takedowns and get the fight where she wants to. And once she gets the fight to the ground, she's a problem for anybody. I think if she got on top of me, she might be a problem. You know, she's just one of those people who just kind of just leeches on you and just drains whatever it is out of you.
Indeed. This is an interesting bout here. I like this division a lot. No question about it. She's got some weird, awkward cadences to her striking and her movement too.
Yeah.
She looks slow. She's always wearing way too many clothes inside the cage, but
she wears too many clothes inside the octagon. That's funny. That is hilarious. She got extra shirt underneath.
Oh yeah, she's got like the full long. She's got like if you could wear a hoodie in the cage, she'd probably be wearing. Be on her, right?
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious! That is hilarious.
But Rashad, 2003 was her pro debut. That's how OG she was back in Japan. 2003.
Wow.
Odd, right.
2003. Wow.
Rashad was sweeping up at the funeral home back in 2003, right?
Yeah, you're right about that. Absolutely.
All right. That is this card for this weekend. Look, I'm no shill. I mean, I'll put it on the UFC if I got to put it on them, all right? But I do have to say this, Rashad. I said it on Tuesday, and I do want to echo it again. I'll criticize them when they need it, and I'll praise them when they need it. Pro sports leagues are not getting back together anytime soon. I mean, like, things are going in the wrong direction, and we got not just, like, decent UFC fights. We got great ones, one after another. A week, 8 days after Saturday's card, it'll be a Sunday card, is what is going to be Dan Hooker and Dustin Poirier. And, like, I mean, come on. Like, this is – shout out to UFC. Shout out to Dana White. Yeah, I want fighter pay fixed. Yeah, Dana's a reckless wild man. But, you know, I owe a debt of gratitude during this quarantine that my job's healthy, that we got this entertainment going on. I did want to throw that in for whatever we say.
Yeah.
We stir up the pot as the media sometimes. We're asking fighters about questions that we know is going to lead to hot button, you know, headlines. But this show ain't stopping. The ship ain't slowing down. And even if the COVID numbers get crazy, having that Apex Center, this is a smart company. They know what they're doing, Rashad. I'm going to give it up to them, all right?
No, absolutely. And I echo that sentiment. You know, the UFC has done a phenomenal job of making sure that they have, you know, led the charge when it comes to professional sports and making sure that they've met expectations of how to come back and how to come back safely. And I don't think people understand how difficult that has to be for someone like, you know, the UFC and Dana White and the whole entire staff to be able to do what they've done. You know, they've uprooted the company, went to Florida and did that for a few weeks, and then came back and did that in Vegas. And now they're looking to do that in Abu Dhabi or the UAE. So it's quite complex what they're doing. And like you said, it's a very bad shine on them right now as far as the whole fighter pay. But these are issues that they're going to have to deal with, and these are issues that they're going to have to be addressed. But at the same time, I feel like there has to be some kind of understanding with the fact of the fragility of the whole economic structure of the world that we're in. And I feel like that's one thing that the fighters may be missing. You know, it may be one thing to get, you know, what you want, but you don't want to cut your nose off to spite your face, because as you're looking to get paid, there's a lot of people who are not getting paid anything at all. You know, that's been losing their jobs and been losing a lot. And not to say that the fighters don't have a gripe. It's just, you know, where there has to be a middle ground in order for there to be some kind of progression.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's not that, you know, it's not that everyone in MMA is thriving. You know, there's been layoffs at The Athletic. There's been layoffs at different websites. But I know, Rashad, that when I'm walking around the neighborhood and I see a neighbor and they're like, hey, how you doing? You know, and this guy lost his job. This lady lost her job. And they're like, how are you doing? I'm like, I'm thriving. And the underlying answer each time is because Dana White's crazy enough to keep fights going, you know?
Right.
So shout out to that.
I mean, and not for nothing, I was talking to a Bellator fighter the other day, and, you know, for what he was saying, he says, listen, I appreciate everything that the Bellator has been able to do as far as giving me pay that the UFC would have probably never given me. But at the same time, I feel like I'm wasting my years of competitiveness away because I'm sitting on a shelf with the organization that doesn't have the organization to make sure that I'm competing regularly. And I think that's one thing that the fighters have to really look at when they're starting to want a buck and be like, I'm not going with this pay scale. It's like, what options do you really have? You can either fight or you cannot fight. You know what I'm saying? And that's really what it's coming down to.
Dana, I have a message for you, Uncle Dana.
I love you. See you soon.
Thank you very much, Dana. Just don't say anything more about the corona, okay? Just don't look into the mirror and say it anymore, please.
I've had a great run, right? If the coronavirus is what's going to get me, let's do it. Bring it. I'm ready, corona. Come.
No. Level of money. I'm sure they've got a doctor walking around with a needle just ready to stick it in them if he gets corona. You're cured on the spot, all right? There it is. Rashad Evans, thank you. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Anything else? You got anything else?
Okay. Nah, that's it, baby. That's it.
Right, we're gonna dip back into the archives pretty soon. Relive your first bout with Tito Ortiz. A lot of good stuff to come for the State of Combat, CBS Sports. If fight is the only game in town this summer and beyond, then CBS Sports HQ, where you and I put our mugs on the screen every once in a while, that might be a good place to stay locked and loaded and ready for all things MMA. Special holiday greetings out to all of you. We got 4th of July coming up.
What else do you want me to say? I mean, Merry Christmas to Brock Lesnar.
Merry Christmas to Brock Lesnar. Rashad, besides two words, the floor is yours.
You know what? I only got two words. We out.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.